Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Yeah, we need some love right about now, you all. We really, really need some love. We need to get a memo to those people who aren't doing it right. And so, yeah, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And we are connecting those dots. We are connecting all the issues that people are fighting about. They're fighting against racism, patriarchy, homophobia. But they're also fighting for something. They're fighting for justice, for equity, for democracy, for, you know, healthcare, for affordable healthcare, and for education, and for police accountability. So there's lots of ways these dots connect. So this is the time that I remind you that there is still genocide going on in Gaza. And I know sometimes that's hard to remember, because a lot of times the rubble in Iran looks like the rubble in the Gaza Strip, but they're different. And so we don't want to forget about the struggle of the Palestinian people just because the news media is not there. Same thing ditto with the folks in Minneapolis. They are still struggling on the streets of Minneapolis. So, and last week you had one of my guests in the future join us in the present. He got his days mixed up, but we're glad we got a little cameo appearance with him, and you'll get more from the folks on the ground. We're going to have a ground report from Minneapolis in a few weeks, and so you'll get to hear straight from the horse's mouth what's going on there and what they're doing and what they're planning to do, and it's a lot. You know, this is a time also that I remind you that we have a 34 count felon in the White House. And I'm going to tell you, I'm not embarrassed by that at all. The people who voted for him need to be embarrassed. But what gives me a certain kind of feeling is that when conscious people around the world look at us as a country, and we live in here, so what can we do? They are wondering, what is wrong with us? What is wrong with the people who live here that man is still at the helm? He's still in control, and he is not only wreaking havoc here in this country, because this is a global economy, and because of the war, now we got a bigger problem than we ever thought we would have. So we've been talking about what it means to have strategy. And you all know, as an organizer, I'm big on strategy. This man made up this war, made up a reason, didn't tell anybody, didn't get permission. He didn't even tell his own allies. He didn't even tell the people in the region that I'm getting ready to bomb, so y'all just be ready. He didn't even tell them. He told nobody. So these people think it's fun and games, and I'm convinced about that. By the way, P.P. Hepsiff talks about the war. You know, he acts like it's some video game. He acts like, and the way they splice together real images of war with these video games, that's some kind of sickness, y'all. So this is the people that we got leading us, and that's disgusting. These folks. And I know Iran's got his issues. So really what it is two bullies fighting, and it's plenty of testosterone there. So we don't know when and where this thing is going to end. But what we can see is that P.P. Hepsiff underestimated his enemy. They said, this is going to be over in a few days. It's going to be short and quick. We've got the mightiest military in the world. It's over. And you know, Trump said that just like he said about COVID. This is going to be over soon. Look here, y'all, we're going into the fourth week at $1 billion a day. And that's what the Pentagon is allowing us to know. I suspect it's probably a couple of $1 billion a day. So we are well on our way to another endless war, because no strategy, no exit gate, no exit plan. No, well, we didn't have an interest plan. So what do you expect? So now we got, what we can really say now is Trump is a war criminal, not just a warmonger. He is a war criminal, because when you bomb targets where children are, where civilians are, then you know, those are the stupid rules of engagement that P.P. Hecsed was talking about. We're not going to comply to those stupid rules of war engagement when there is our conventions, you all, conventions for fighting wars. It sounds silly that you try to be civil about killing, but they do have that. And so these folks are not even adhering to the conventions that all other countries, all other civilized people are adhering to. And the other miscalculation that P.P. Hecsed made was that he forgot about the Strait of Hormuz. So looky here, Iran say nobody's getting through, nobody's going to pass ships, and if you try, you're going to suffer the consequences. So you got all of these tankers lined up trying to get through, creating an oil shortage. And not just like at the gasoline pump, because we're feeling that, right? That crude oil also goes for diesel fuel for trucks, you know, getting our food here and there. Also for airline fuel. Don't even get me talking about what's going on with the airlines with TSA and ICE. But yeah, so we got so much confusion, y'all. But we got to pay attention because that's what this is all about, creating confusion while these folks rob us blind and get us into conflicts that it's going to be hard for us to get out of. So let us stay vigilant. Let us stay woke. There's nothing wrong with being woke. I love being woke. It calls for a certain amount of stress, for sure. But we have to let our people know what's going on so they can be ready for what's going to happen. These folks think it's fun and games the way that they are tearing up our lives, literally tearing up our lives. And so we have to get more organized. Some good news and some bad news. I've been reporting on what's been going on with people, not politicians. Yesterday, the Supreme Court gave us a negative ruling. They said that the Missouri legislature can put forth a gerrymander map at any time during the census period, which is that 10-year period. So the fact that they did it now, nothing wrong with that. There's nothing in the state constitution that says otherwise. And they probably are right, but that's not the point, really. The point is the interpretation and the implications of that and what that means. That means that every year they could do this. Every year they could have a new map. And so it opens up the door for that. So I think the judges could, justices could have done a little better with that ruling. But guess what? We already knew they probably would do that. That's why we collected 300,000 signatures and we got enough to qualify for the ballot, and it will be on the November ballot. So now, Mr. Supreme Court, because that's what it is, a bunch of patriarchy folks trying to uphold patriarchy. So yeah, so the voters are going to have the last say on this. And that gerrymandered map that they try to do, and I'm just going to give you all one example of how that map was going to look. In Kansas City, District 5, which is the only seat for a black congressperson, would extend all the way to Columbia. Can you all imagine that? All the way to Columbia from Kansas City, which is on the western side of the state, somebody's district was going to include all of that urban, rural, suburban. Come on, y'all. So we got a chance to bring some sanity and some logic to this map. And we got to do that on November, in November. And you're going to hear lots more about that. But I just wanted you to know that ruling just came down yesterday, and we had a meeting this morning to talk about that. So we're good to go on the ballot. Thank y'all for signing up. Thank you for pushing, and thank you for making sure that democracy prevails. So here we are with our guest. I am thrilled to have Annie Rice on here. This is her first time being on Voices from the Battlefield. Annie is now, right now, she's the senior policy counsel at Arc City Defenders. And as you all know, that's one of the defenders of the suit against the state, which I'm a part of. So I always have to mention that. So people say, well, how she knew that girl was part of that. Why? Because she didn't tell nobody. Annie Rice is a part of Arc City Defenders, and there's some hell of a defenders down there. So I'm happy to be associated with them. But Annie, because she's an attorney, she has been on many battlefields. So she's been on the battlefield for immigration. In fact, she's on the board for MICA project, and she's probably done some stuff around housing. So wherever that legal expertise is needed, you can best believe that Annie's been there. She also served as an alderperson from 2018 to 2023. So she's uniquely qualified to look at the city, look at all the stuff that's happening, particularly the processes, the city charter, how it interacts with the state constitution, all those stuff that sometimes gets us hung up. She's going to walk us through that. Annie, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm going to start off by saying back, it's been at least 5 years ago when we had Megan Green come on as president of the Board of Alders. We elected the first black female mayor, Tashara Jones. We had Darlene Green as the comptroller. And then, mainly those, but Kim Gardner was a part of that initially. And we said, these, it's not just you, they were women, but we said, these are folks who have a community-oriented agenda. So we are going to be able to make some leaps and bounds in this city that we haven't made in a while. But we got to know what's going on, and we got to know the systems themselves if we expect to change, manipulate, go through, go around. And so what I started to do is have these civic lessons, these little mini civic lessons. So you're a part of that because I remember when we were going through the charter, which we had been wanting to do that. We had wanted to look at the charter changes because it's old and antiquated, but it didn't quite go as we expected. But I would have older people calling me saying, "Shamala, get your people together because they don't they're talking mad and not understanding the systems and the charter itself and the rules of engagement. And so maybe you should be trying to help them understand that before they get on these webinars and start tearing us apart." So that helped me to intensify my efforts around the civics lesson. So we're going to have a civics lesson today, y'all. And Annie, as I said, is uniquely qualified as an attorney. She knows the laws, and she could tell us which ones we can break, and what we get when we break them. That's the main reason I need attorneys. Tell me the laws. Tell me how far I could push it, and then tell me what my consequences would be should I break them. So we're getting in ready to that, but some of you all have got mailers already, and it's interesting. There's only some parts of the city, but some of you all are getting mailings around the earnings tax. That is going to be the only thing on the city ballot on April 7th. And some of you are like, "What is this?" And I know it's confusing, and because we vote on it every 5 years, it makes it even more confusing. So Annie's going to just give us a snippet about what is prop, not property, what is the earnings tax, and why do we have to vote on it, and what happens if we don't?
Yep, that's right. So the earnings tax is a 1% tax that is collected on the earnings of anyone who lives or works in the city of St. Louis. So any resident in the city of St. Louis gets 1% off, and then any person who works in the city of St. Louis, whether or not they live in the city, also gets that 1% taken off by their employer, and that comes to the city. And it makes up 36% of the city's general fund. So it is a massive fund of money that we absolutely have to have when we're talking about city services. And I know, I was reading on a neighborhood page today, and someone said, "Well, I don't like city services the way that they are. They aren't working." And well, surely cutting 36% of the budget isn't going to help them work better, right? But so the earnings tax is actually a fairly progressive tax because it's 1% of your earnings regardless how much you make. So if you make less money, it's less money coming out of your check. If you make more money, it's more money coming out of your check. It's important because that sort of like balances the scales for people as they're earning. And we're all paying a part of it. This is one way that we actually get money from people that live in the county that take advantage of the services that the city of St. Louis provides, like driving on our streets. And so they pay that tax into it. So I think it's really important. We have to vote on it every 5 years because the folks in Jefferson City, the Republicans, don't like taxes, and they don't like, especially don't like progressive taxes that are equal for folks, or equitable, I would say, for folks. And so they passed a an amendment that says that we have to vote on it every 5 years. So that's why we have to keep coming back to the ballot. It's purposely in April. It's a low turnout election. They're trying to ensure that we don't pass this. And so that's why it's so important to get the word out. And you know, people are going, well, there's nothing else on the ballot. Why would I go vote? Like, but it is incredibly important. Like 36% of the city general fund. So it's street repair, fire, police services, lighting, forestry, neighborhood stabilization. All of that comes into play there. So I like city services, and this is very much like this is me not as arch city defenders, but me personal Annie Rice
As a
will be
citizen.
voting yes
Right,
to
right, right.
support this. But you know, do your research. There's information out there about what you know what all this goes to. And the better we make our city for all of us, you know, the better we all thrive. And so we really have to fund things like this.
And we would be remiss if we didn't connect the dots and see how billionaires are
Yes.
affecting the way that we live. So it was a
Yes.
billionaire
Yes.
who funded the proposition that put it on the ballot.
That's right.
And the only way we were able to temper that is by saying, let's vote for it at least every 5 years, because
Yes.
they were going to like do away with it altogether.
Right.
So
Right.
Rex Thingfield, as you know, is a billionaire from Missouri. He's thrown his money around some other issues, but this is one that really is going to be with us for a while. And
That's right.
so, of course, doesn't make any difference to him. He doesn't even know he probably pays earnings tax. But I think it was a good point you made, Annie, that many of us are paying it and we may not know it if we work in the city, it's just coming out. And because it's only 1%, we're probably not missing it. But it ends up being really big when you start amassing all of our 1% coming together and it actually 1/3 of the city budget. So just imagine if you had 1/3 of the income in your house totally gone, what you would be able to do. And
Right.
probably not a whole lot.
Right.
So
Right.
yeah, so I'm voting yes on. I want to make sure that you're supposed to say yes and not no, because you know how the confusing they try to do the
Correct.
ballot
That's
language.
right. Yep.
But we are for the earnings tax.
Keeping.
We are
Yes, we are for
for
keeping the earnings
keeping
tax.
that.
That's right.
So just
Yep.
remember, however the language is on the ballot on April 7th, we are for keeping that tax because
That's
that is
right.
helping us pay for all that we need in the city. And
Yeah.
of course, we should be trying to find more money, not less. So,
That's
you know,
right.
because, yeah.
That's a good point. And keeping in mind that the state is trying to do away with all sorts of, you know, like they're trying to change the tax scheme across the state that's going to hurt low income folks more. It's going to help rich people again, because that's all they keep doing is trying to help rich folks. And so this is a key piece of that we really need to make sure that our revenues stay up so that we can fund the things that our city needs. So, and voting is
Absolutely.
already early voting is open, early voting, no excuse absentee voting is what it's called. But you can go and you can vote. There's a few locations. You should have gotten a card in the mail with your registration on it. It can and vote anywhere is still an option in the city. So if you vote on election day, you can vote at any of the polling places. Just make sure you take an ID with you, because photo ID was upheld. So gotta take that photo ID with you.
Yeah, you know what? When that happened, a lot of people didn't get that memo. And so I was telling them you could vote anywhere. They didn't believe it. It's like, no, I got to vote at my polling place. I'm like, no, we've been working on this stuff to make it easier for you. So if you
That's
happen to be
right.
over on the south side of the city, go vote there.
Yep.
And the fact that you don't need now an excuse like you used to have a, you know, why are you voting early? No, now you just go vote. So maybe you don't want to take off work to do that on the 7th, and you want to do it, you know, this day you got a day off work coming up. Go vote. But we already know what the game is. The game is to put it on April 7th when there's nothing else, and literally there's nothing else on the ballot, y'all, but this.
Yeah. Yep.
So we got to make a showing. We do. We
Yeah.
do. We do. Yeah. So Annie, we've been building up over the last few months on this police budget. This
Yeah.
police budget is coming into focus just because of 495 legislation, which established the took local control away from the citizens of St.
Right.
Louis, and now it's under the governor. And now the city's got all these demands that we have to meet, all for one department. So I would really like you to walk us through the key components of 495,
That's right.
particularly the political implications, but right now it's all about the budget. So that's
That's
the
right.
finances.
Yeah.
So maybe it's easier to start with the finances to get people understanding what we up against, because these
Yeah.
people just got a raise, 7% raise last year. Now they're asking for another 7%, and they're also not asking, demanding, lifelong health care. And I've been looking for this, Annie. I can't find anywhere where any company gives lifelong health care.
Yeah.
So they're asking for stuff that other folks can't get and don't get. So yeah,
Yeah.
they're trying. And I keep saying, what if they break the city? Who's going to be here for them to serve, quote, serve and protect? So it seems crazy. But one city official, one board member, and I need to find out who actually said this so I can attribute that quote to them, said that we're trying to get as much money as we can. Well, is that really the goal here? Is that
It sure
apparently
seems
it
like
is.
it. It sure seems like it, right? And I think that quote was the president of the board, Chris Saraceno, who was interviewed. I think that was a Mark Maxwell interview where he said, so you're just going to take everything that you can. And he said, well, yeah. It was either him or the attorney, Chris Greville, who is paid $275 an hour to be the attorney, the hired attorney, who lives in De Pere, but is the hired attorney for the St. Louis Board of Police Commissioners.
And whose salary we're paying. So I want people
You're
to
paying.
understand that anything they are paying for, we are paying for,
Correct.
city taxpayers.
That's right. That's right. So the bill back last year was passed through the state legislature, HB 495, did lots of things, but one of the things was take away local control, that folks like Jamala and Operation or Organization for Black Struggle and CAPCAR and so many others fought so hard for us to get back in 2012 after a statewide vote. The legislature again said, no, you didn't mean that. And they stripped local control again. So we basically have this state board now. The governor appoints these five folks. He appoints five folks to be on this board of police commissioners. And then the mayor of the city of St. Louis, whoever is in that position, is also on the board. But they get to do everything from setting police policy to setting salaries to hiring the chief, directing basically the entirety of the police department. And these are folks who are not elected. They're not accountable to the people of St. Louis. They are appointed. And right now we have, so Chris Saraceno is the president of the board. He owns Chris's Pancakes and Chris's at the Docket and Bartolino's and a private security company, which I think is wild. We've got Brad Ortega, who was on the civilian oversight board for a little bit, and he owns a photography studio, I think. We've got Mr.
Yeah,
Don
on
Brown.
South Side.
Yeah, we got Don Brown. Don Brown Chevrolet is a non-voting member, but his outfit over there, his car dealership, has had the contract to supply city police vehicles since 1985, and now he sits on the decision-making board that decides who's where they're purchasing those vehicles. You have Sonia Jenkins Gray is the vice president. She was formerly the personnel director for the city of St. Louis under Mayor Tishara Jones, was fired from that position and then appointed onto this board. And then we've got Eddie McVeigh is the last one. He's on the police board as well. He owns Maggie O's downtown. So, and they have a second location as well. But yeah, these folks are, so they're business owners. They're, business owners, and not really all of them live south of Del Mar, every single one of them. Most of them live on the hills, St. Louis Hills, Lindenwood Park. They're all, deep on the south side. So there's not really great representation on that. And they get to make all the decisions. So like you said, they demanded a 7% salary raise for police last year. That froze, then the mayor had to freeze planned increases for other city employees because some of our city employees are making 30% less than they could if they were in the private sector. So we are We are deeply behind in raising wages for city employees, and that's part of the reason why we have so many vacancies in the city, and that's why our city services struggle. But they said, no, we get to set this. And the law says that the Board of Police Commissioners gets to ask for as much money as they want to effectuate the police department. But there's minimum percentages that they must be given every year of the city's general revenue. And that general revenue is a very squishy term. It's not a specific, because we have things like the general fund, but that's not the same as general revenue. And so this is what they're currently fighting about. But they're given, under the law, 25% of the city general revenue every year starting in January of 2028. But so for this period that we're sort of budgeting around right now, it's going to be 24%. So it's like an incremental increase to that. But so getting up to 25% of the city budget, and they don't really, so they're it's kind of a mess. It's a mess of what they're asking for. It's the city has said, here's what we think 25% of our budget is. They gave them that budget allocation, or sort of their allowance. Like, here's based on everything that we know about what money comes into the city, what it's specifically required to go out for, right? So, like, grant funds that have specific purposes, or tax revenue that has specific purposes that has to be spent on. They calculated all that, and they calculated 25% of that. And they said, you get $203 million. And the Board of Police Commissioners came back and said, no, we want more than that. They said, we actually would like $250 million. And that was sort of a their beginning of the request, and then there was more included in there because of these lifetime healthcare benefits that they reinstated, that had disappeared under local control. They gave those back. The mayor has said at one point that they were actually asking for $330 million. And the problem with the numbers is, we know it's a massive amount, but they never explained their budget request. They never explained, why are you asking for $2 million for legal services? Why are you asking for $40 million for maintenance and facilities, right? Like, what is that? They never answered those questions. And so, but the budget demand, right, is that they have to spend this up to 24% of this fund. And the city, actually, there's language in the bill that says that local officials can't say no, that they have to pass whatever it is that the Police Board of Commissioners asks for. They have to fund the police department to these levels. And there's
Mayor has said
actually
at one point that they were
language
actually
with
asking for 330.
a possible penalty of $1,000 per obstruction offense and forever disqualification from holding elected office, or holding office in the city, any office in the city. And so it's really like the police are strong arming the city of St. Louis and saying, we want as much money as we can possibly take from you. And we're looking at massive budget cuts if this goes through. So if what they, unless they come back to the table to negotiate and say, actually, like, you're right, that 203 million is all that we want, which is an increase from what they've previously gotten, then we're in real trouble. Like, a lot of city services are going to get cut.
And so one of the persons on the board that we forgot to mention is the mayor herself. Mayor
That's right.
Kara Spencer is
Yes.
also. And she has spoken out against the increase, because she's got to be the one helping to figure out if that goes down, like, what is going to be cut. And what I think is so selfish is that as you pointed out, Annie, there are city workers who have been doing their jobs forever with minimal increases, whether it be merit or cost of living. But
Yep.
here's the police saying, we don't care about those other
Right.
city services.
Right.
We are the most important thing here. And when people come to you with that kind of attitude, one that's non-negotiable, one that's, you then say, y'all, we're gonna make sure you don't get anything. Well, or little as
Yeah.
possible, because
Yeah.
first of all, we don't think you're doing your job, and what you're doing is the reason why we fought so hard for local control and independence of being oversight. So we don't think you're doing that great. So why would you get more?
Right, right. And if I
But
could, on
go
one of the
ahead.
things about the board that I think is really interesting, so the mayor was the only board member to vote no on this budget request. Sonia Jenkins Gray, who sits on this board, she was the director of personnel. She knows exactly how little city employees are getting paid. She knows exactly what the struggles are to hire enough staff to run the city of St. Louis. And yet she voted yes on this. And they asked for almost a doubling of their salary fund, but didn't tell us, are you paying them more? Are you trying to hire more officers? But they keep saying we can't hire officers when they've got the best pensions, the best lifetime healthcare, and those healthcare costs and pension costs are excluded from the 25% that they demand from the city of St. Louis every year. So they get even more money than that 25%.
Yeah. And so every time you say that, I just think about more money, more money, more money. But
Yes.
a couple of weeks ago, I wrote about this whole scenario, and I pointed out that it's not just the police budget that goes up and the salaries and the increases and the health care, but we have in this city a parity
That's right.
provision, which means that the firefighters get the same thing.
Right.
So explain that, because people, when they said Jamal, they get the whose
Yeah.
idea was that? Yeah,
Yeah.
again,
Yeah.
civics
So there's
lesson,
a,
y'all, civics lesson.
that's right. There's a provision in the city charter that says that we that any increases that the police get, then fire department gets, any increases the fire department get, the police get. And so this is a great benefit for the fire department that because the police are out here asking for raises all the time, and so fire department is getting paid. And honestly, I don't know how many folks are like, you know what? No, let's not pay firefighters. I'm plenty of folks saying like, because the fire department shows up, they're the first ones on the scene, they're always there, right? But then the police roll in an hour and a half later, right? So it's one of those things that like has to be included in the calculation, right? The city, any demand that they make, we basically double that. So those 7% raises, 7% raises for the firefighters, which again, happy for those employees, but other things suffer, right? And we could talk about all the programs that are on the chopping block and the things that actually make us safe in the city of St. Louis, the things that we're showing progress, that we're showing success.
So looking at that, and having been an alderperson before, what are you think are going to be the most likely areas on the chopping block should this proceed?
Yeah. I mean, already we're hearing about cuts in the Office of Violence Prevention. So at the same time that this their budget increase is getting bigger, and our revenue growth was about 2% this year, so it was a pretty low revenue growth year. We're also looking at the end of the ARPA fund. So that was the American Rescue Plan Act coming out of COVID, the height of COVID. And that money has to get spent this year. So as soon as that money is gone, it is gone, right? So thanks to former Congresswoman Cori Bush, we had $550 million come in, and we use that money for things like the Office of Violence Prevention or for building stabilization, for all sorts of other programs, that money is dwindling. And so we're looking at where in the budget are, those things should be incorporated into the city budget now, because we know that they work. Because taking care of people prior to violence or after violence starts and can be interrupted, or having programs for youth, right, have been really effective at lowering our crime rates, but we don't have the money for it anymore. So, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest places. The mayor said mass layoffs, right? Like we're It's hard to know exactly where that money would come from. I think it's going to come a little bit from everywhere. And we're already down several hundred city workers, right? If not 1,000 or more city workers from what authorized, like where we should be to fully staff our departments. And so it means longer lines at City Hall to get things done. It means longer waits. It means your trash, right, could get slowed down, and maybe it's picked up every other week instead of every week, right? maybe the recycling service, like again, that's one that they've been trying to work on. What happens to the recycling services, the fees there at the water department, right? Every time you see them digging up a hole because the water main broke again, or your water goes off because there's a leak and they've got to shut it off, right? All of those things, trimming the trees that like are so important for our canopy and keeping people's prices down and keeping people healthy. The city, how are we going to plant new trees? How are we going to take care of the trees that we have? All of that. And then, I mean, that's not even talking about the folks still trying to recover from the tornado, right? Like, where are we going to get the money to make these folks whole? That's a $2 billion disaster, right? And so even the pennies that the city could have thrown at that, are the police demanding that money from us? It sure feels like they are.
So I'm just thinking about the county doesn't have the same problem with the police, but they are having budget issues. And so my thinking always, and reality has borne this out, is that when it comes to cuts, these folks usually go the path of least resistance. And so whoever's going to make a big stink, they're going to stay away from that. And I thought it was interesting that the county executive was going to cut out the pools for the summer. Come on,
I mean,
that
that's
couldn't be
hard.
that damn much money. I mean, but again, kids, who's going to make a big deal about that? I mean, really? So, but I think we have to connect the dots, Annie, about why cities are cash strapped. And we go straight to the federal policies around money. And we saw that the big ugly bill was cuts, 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 cuts for social services and tax breaks for the wealthy.
That's
And
right.
so the trickle down does happen, but it's only pennies trickling down. And so when we don't have enough money at the local and state level, then we need to look to the feds because, like you said, after the ARPA money is gone and we got 2% growth and really not a whole lot of potential for growth in St. Louis, then we're gonna have to start cutting. And most people then look local instead of like fighting on with their Congress people about like why are you getting these tax breaks for the wealthy when we still suffering here. And I don't see any other revenue coming that way that would help us on a local level with some of the really basic needs. And I remember we were able to convince, and I did take a whole lot of convincing, Mayor Tashara Jones, that more police was not the issue. And the places where they had, invested in, youth development, youth recreation, jobs, affordable housing, you saw a decrease. And so even across the country, people used that ARPA money, Annie, they did. And we've seen the crime rate go down, homicide rates go down, and people act like that's some kind of mystery, but it's not a mystery because that money was invested in places where we've been saying for years, if you put it here, you're going to see some return. And now it's going to be all about policing.
I mean, and that feels really intentional, the way that the everybody's finances are tightening, right? And the more folks have to struggle to find the money to pay their rent, to pay their mortgage, to pay their gas, right? All of these electricity rates that are going up and all of that, like the tighter it gets, the more crime actually rises, right? Like the more desperate people get, the more crime rises. So then you have to throw more police at it. Is there intention? So it sure all feels connected that they're anticipating spikes in crime because if we're in a recession, if we're moving towards that, right, then people get more desperate. And it's really sick, I think, that we're doing it in this pattern again, right? They're talking about having to build more jails. The governor is talking about sentencing changes that would require us to build a jail in Missouri, another prison in Missouri, right? Like all of this is connected. The instead of investing in the people and investing in quality of life for people, we're investing in punishment and prisons and caging, right? Like, and it doesn't make sense. How does a city thrive with just a prison? We would thrive if people were in school, if they were going to work, if they had healthy communities and rec centers and gathering spaces, and places that they could just be humans and thrive together, right? Had enough food to eat.
And before we came on air, we talked about the whole notion of the kids doing their recreation in the streets of St. Louis. And one of the things I always say is like that teen group from like about 13 to 17, 18, we don't have a whole lot of creative,
Yeah.
innovative, interesting things for them. And so they make their own fun. And when
Yeah.
they make their own fun, we don't like it. And
Right.
so here they are doing wheelies and having fun and acting, you know, acting reckless because it was, and that's what young people do.
Yeah.
They're reckless. They're just that's the nature of adolescence. But instead of saying, okay, where could these young people be? And are our rec centers welcoming to teens? Do they have teen programs? Do we then put the hammer on there? Not only is it the hammer on the kids, now we're saying we're gonna get these parents too.
Yeah.
Okay, so when I heard that there was 11, somebody as young as 11, I said, okay, I can tell you where that is. Mama said, Johnny, you better watch your little brother. And so Johnny, who's 16, said, I'm gonna take you over here to where I'm
Yeah.
going. I know how that works. And so
Yeah.
there's no place for these kids to go. And I'm thinking about this summer when it's gonna be
Yeah.
hot, people won't have money. It's
Yeah.
not gonna be a good scene. And so
Yeah.
us knowing that as visionaries and people who tend to be proactive, how else could we be looking at this scenario
Yeah.
other than like, you don't get all this money, Mr. Popo. You can't because we got all these other things.
Yeah.
What would be some of the other scenarios that the city could be looking at? And I'm asking you to
Yeah.
put on your old ex alderperson hat.
Sure. Oh, sorry. I'm hoping not freezing up. It's getting a little glitchy here, so hopefully you can hear me. But I had some critiques of some of the sort of late night programs that that Mayor Tishara Jones had, just because it seemed like there was a lot of security, but they also seemed successful, right? Like kids went there late nights and had fun. They were able to do that. I think the rec centers are huge. The pools are huge. Like the feeding kids at the rec centers, right? That was a thing that happened under COVID, was anybody could show up and get a bag of food, right? Like that kind of stuff is important. Or St. Louis Public Library, like they had hot spots that they were renting out, which I think they're stopping doing now because a lot weren't returned. But things like that, the kids could get resources, they could get things to do. So I mean, it's libraries, it's rec centers, it's trying to figure out, right, where we can staff up spaces for kids to be kids. And I think like it's the exact opposite of what we saw this weekend, right? Like we saw the previous weekend, we saw a bunch of craziness over in Bevo. We had a bunch of people in cars and doing crazy things in cars in Bevo. And so they instituted a curfew downtown and downtown West, and then put out a sizzle reel of a bunch of children in zip ties, right? Like that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever, right? Like these children weren't the ones out here doing donuts in Bevo, right? You can't connect those dots for me. This was all because there were people in town for March Madness, right? And they could show off, hey, we've got kids in handcuffs. Like it's disgusting to me that we would put that out as it was somehow some sort of positive, right? And I know they talked all about like we had resources for the kids inside and all of that, but like why not take resources to them before you put them in a paddy wagon, right? That's awful. It's all of the things that they said that they had inside the police department once they picked them up. Do that on the front end, right? Take all of those resources and do that first, right? And the city knows that. I mean, everybody knows that that's the answer. We just have to have the courage to say no to the police and say the community is more important.
And I always start with the kids, because if we can make it safe and fun for them, then the rest of us are going to be okay, because there's a certain stress level for a parent, grandparent, or guardian that if you have to work and you tell your kid stay inside, you know that's not going to
Yeah,
happen. So all you could do is
sure.
just hope and pray that when they decide to go out there, they'll be able to come back home. But you know, I think for us as a city, there's not that sort of child center, youth center, family oriented
Yeah.
way that we do things. I mean,
Yeah.
it's willy-nilly. But I do want us to talk about the other part of 495,
Sure.
which we're talking about punishment, Annie. They have included in their punishment for anybody who interferes with what they want to do. And
Yeah.
so we don't know what that means. I
Right.
certainly don't know what interfere means because I'm a hard-headed person. So what do you think
Yeah.
interfere means?
Oh, listen, that is for somebody in court to figure out. I don't want to get in the way of that now because then, I can't encourage people to break the law, but when the law is vague, then that's where attorneys come in and we argue about it, right? It does. So there's a provision that says that local legislators, so the Board of Aldermen, the mayor, can't interfere with the police, and that means that they can't pass any ordinances or any sort of orders impeding the police or obstructing or hindering or interfering, and can't conflict or interfere with the power of the Board of Police Commissioners. And since they get to set policy, that means that anything, like nothing, can come through the Board of Aldermen or the mayor that interferes with their policymaking authority. And so it says that we can pass things, but it's about securing property, protecting public and private property. But that's not actually, but anyway, it's things that I'm worried about, policies that came through the Board of Aldermen or the mayor's office, right? Like banning no-knock raids or banning chokeholds that the police don't have to abide by anymore. It says any ordinances previously passed or in the future, right? And that's the Civilian Oversight Board. It's the civilian oversight of police surveillance technology, right? Like those things kind of go away unless they willingly enter into some sort of oversight, which I don't think that they're going to do. And then you're right, like there's this penalty provision that says that any person who resists, obstructs the police or the Board of Police Commissioners or fails to disburse money faces a penalty of $1,000 per offense and forever disqualification from any office or employment under the mayor or municipal assembly. Like that is a threat
That's
on
a
the
threat. It's
legislative
another
power.
bullying tactic. It's
Yes.
another bullying tactic to
Yes.
make people stand down. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I respect a lot. There was a hearing at the Board of Aldermen on a resolution calling on the Board of Police Commissioners to negotiate in good faith and to try to tell the state to back off some more laws that they're trying to pass that basically allow them to submit an invoice to the city of St. Louis and bypass the Board of ENA altogether, because ENA makes every financial decision for the city of St. Louis, but they want to be able to bypass ENA, so ENA couldn't even say no. But so this resolution was to oppose those bills, and President Green said, she's one of the members of the Board of ENA, and said, I will vote no on this, right? And she says, the time, if there's ever a time to challenge what this piece of the law says, it's right now. Because we know the moment we give them any dime, they will come back for it year after year after year. It's like give a mouse a cookie time, and we have to stop it as soon as we can.
Right. And so obviously the opposition is building against this police budget because it is so selfish and it is to the detriment of the city of St. Louis. Who would shoot themselves in the foot like this? But this is what they're doing. And so we know that last week the Public Safety Committee had that hearing, and it was
Yeah.
full, and people were in support of the resolution. And we know a resolution is not binding, but it
Right.
certainly gave you the temperature of the opposition to what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's not stopping. We know that there's also the lawsuit that myself and Mike Melton are a part of, and I know you aren't on that team, but that is. We had a date, February 19th, that was postponed, and so that may come up before the legislative session ends. And so that's another way that we will be, ramping up to get people to understand the relationship between the city and the
Yeah.
state and what our role could be, because we're not just city dwellers, we
Right.
also part of the state. And so
Yeah.
all of this is involving our tax money, and so we have to speak up. And so that will be happening. We definitely will be mobilizing people to be in the courtroom in Jeff City. But today is also a hearing, and this is the budget hearing, budget and what is it, public employees,
That's right.
that
Yep.
committee. So this, explain what's going to happen tonight. Are
Yeah.
they going to be presenting the police budget again
No,
or
so
what?
tonight we're still in the process where the budget is being finalized. So we haven't seen a final budget from the a budget proposal from the whole of the city of St. Louis yet. The hearing that's happening tonight is about the RAM settlement funds in particular. So they've been having these monthly evening meetings. And our friends at Action St. Louis have been rallying folks to come out because North City needs that money, especially after the tornado. So that is what tonight is about, is specifically about the RAM settlement funds, which I think it's still important for people to pay attention to because there's been some talk about the police department thinking that they get 25% of that RAM settlement fund too, right? Which is
Connecting the
absolutely
dots, y'all.
insane.
Connecting the dots.
Connect the
Connecting the
dots,
dots.
right? They've said that they're coming for every penny that they're owed, which is just how is that a good neighbor way to participate in the world? But yeah, so that's going to be tonight. And then what we know is coming on the budget. So the mayor will get a finalized budget sometime in the next week or so. The April 1st is the date when the budget director has to get that budget over to the mayor. The mayor presents it to the Board of Estimate and Apportionment, and they will have a presentation on April 15th. That is a it's a Wednesday. It's their regular Board of E&A meeting. Then on April 17th, there's a public hearing in front of the Board of E&A, and that's where the public can weigh in on the budget proposal, on the police budget, on all of this, and say, here are the things that we really care about and you must fund, because E&A is the main decision maker on the budget. The Board of Aldermen gets to weigh in and they can make cuts, but they can't add money back into the budget. E&A has to do that. So the members of E&A are the mayor, the comptroller, and the president of the Board of Aldermen, right? And so that's Mayor Kara Spencer, Comptroller Donna Behringer, and President Megan Green. Those are the three key decision makers when it comes down to this. And so April 15th is a great time, or 17th is a great time to mark on your calendars to be ready to testify. That usually happens at 10 a.m., but they haven't put that out yet, but we'll circulate it when they do. And then there will be time once the Board of Aldermen receives the budget after that, before the end of June, to testify on some things. But like I said, the main power lies with ENA. So those are the folks that we're really trying to pressure. And the Board of Police Commissioners, there have been calls for boycotts. There have been protests outside their places of business because they're unelected. The only way that they are accountable to us, or if we show up to them and we let them know how we feel, because they could also pull back their budget request. They could change the way that they're operating.
Exactly. And so tonight, do you have an idea how much money is left in the Rams settlement?
I'm pretty sure that we haven't really touched the principal. I think that we've mainly been using the interest funds. So, yeah.
So that's quite a sum there. So if they get their hands on that money, that to me is the last like sort of discretionary pot of money that the city would have once ARPA goes, which has to be spent. And so on the way, you all, to that April 17th meeting that Annie talked about, there's going to be a special meeting on April 1st at 6 p.m. at the Northside Movement Center so that we can start planning for this and so that you get fully informed about what's going on and what role you can play. But the community is going to have to come together in a more
Absolutely.
organized way to make these people understand that we are not playing. We are not playing. So I'm trying to think of any other thing that I've heard people ask when I'm out and about, but I know that money thing and the fact that it could devastate the city, and why is the police doing that? Now I can't answer that because I'm not in their head, nor would I ever want to be, but it seems almost suicidal for the city.
It
And
does.
then you ha then you have the Kehoe, Governor Kehoe, saying he loves to we'd love to do away with the income tax. And you're thinking, okay, we already are low in terms of resources and income and income streams. Why would we be eliminating
That's
the
right.
things that could help us? It just
That's right.
it's counterintuitive. It really
Yeah.
is. And
Yeah, and
so,
these board members were asked at their confirmation hearings in the Senate, or they were told, hey, you're business owners, so we know you care about the city of St. Louis. Well, if you care, then why are you trying to bankrupt us? Right? If you know who's going to come downtown if there's police on every corner, but there's potholes, right? Like what these potholes are going to be brought to you by the SLMPD at a certain point, right? Who's going to keep coming into the city and spending money at your businesses if there's trash all over the place that we can't pick up? I think it's shocking to me that people who claim that they love the city this much would be interested in defunding these other city services that are so important to us.
And I would have to emphasize, this is not necessarily about being anti-police. It really is about how are we going to govern a city and how are we going to fund city services. And so if you got an entity over here that's trying to extract more money than they need, deserve, or whatever, to the detriment of the rest of it, something's got to give. And
That's right.
so I would just encourage people, however you fall on that spectrum of abolition to like being pro-police, that in between all of that is the city going down the tube.
Right.
And what are you going to do about that? And
Yeah.
so yeah, so there's a place for everybody to have a viewpoint. We've made it clear that folks can go testify even at the hearing tonight. You got a view on that because, as you said, the police are trying to get any pot of money they can, and because they're bullying in such a way that they put the language that something could happen to you if you say no to them, then people are reluctant to say, well, what about this? What about that? I'm saying come full force with whatever ideas you have about how we are going to use this money in an equitable way. And if that means police don't get all of what they need, but other entities do, that so be it. So be it. So be it. So I think we could talk a lot about this, Annie, because there's more to talk about, and we're gonna see how these people respond when they get the opposition. They might turn up the heat on us in the streets. So we gotta get ready for that. But yeah, I just want to thank you for sharing your expertise and coming out. We want to remind people that the budget hearing today will be about the ARP, not the ARPA money, the RAMS money. April 1st is a community meeting on the city budget and state takeover. Soon, I'm hoping that we will be able to tell you when the court date is for the state takeover hearing. So there's a lot of places that you can enter. On April 9th, there's going to be the protest to from protest to policy, the struggle for local control continues. That's going to be at 6 o'clock at the Deaconess Center. So there's a lot of ways to be informed, and we want you to be informed. I'm just going to remind you that tomorrow morning is a press conference that the Uhuru Movement is having because they are being called into court again. And this is all about free speech and the press, and so we got to make sure we understand that. I will have Chairman O'Malley Usatelli come in about 3 weeks, I think, because they got a conference, local conference coming in. No Kings is coming up this weekend. There's two places where you can participate. In fact, you can do both of them. One of them is at 11 at the Tam Overpass, which is over there, 6400 Oakland, right by the park. And then the No Kings downtown will be at out, what is that, Alo Park?
Elo Park, yeah.
And that's 1820 Market. So that's right across the street from the post office. That's going to be at 1. So you can do the 11 a.m. one, come and do the 1 p.m., or you can do one. But we need to show up to let these folks know no kings, no queens, no clowns, no thrones. That's gone. That's dead. It's about the people. So sometimes we got to remind them in creative ways. And these are going on all across the city. It's more than 3,000 that are being planned in just about every nook and cranny, every city, every town. Even where there's red, there's going to be people out, you all. So we hope that you will join them in some way, somehow, to show that you are not for oligarchy, you're not for authoritarianism, and you definitely are not for the clown that's in the White House right now. So, yeah, this is some incredible times we're living in, and what can you say? But you're glad you're a part of it because you're going to determine how the future looks. You really are. This is Kamala Robbins, your host, and I will see you on that battlefield.